Straits brings legal and business insights at the intersection of the shipping and energy sectors. This podcast series offers trends, developments, challenges, and topics of interest from Reed Smith litigation, regulatory, and finance lawyers across our network of global offices. If you have any questions about the topics discussed on this podcast, please do contact our speakers.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Reed Smith's Trading Straits podcast. My name is Laura Hine. I'm an associate in Reed Smith's London Transportation team. Also on the podcast today is Mike Adamson, counsel in the transportation team. Today, Mike and I are going to be discussing the use of alternative fuels in the maritime industry. That is, fuels other than traditional marine fuel. What are they? Why might they be used? What are some of the practical and legal issues surrounding the use of alternative fuels? And what does the future look like as regulators increasingly call for shipping to decarbonise? So first of all, Mike, why are alternative fuels such a hot topic at the moment?
Well, Laura, as everyone knows, there are global efforts towards decarbonisation. And I think it is fair to say that it is now widely accepted that the shipping industry will have to play a role in this. The IMO's 2018 strategy on the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions from shipping set an objective to reduce carbon intensity of international shipping by at least 40% by 2030 and 70% by 2050. The EU's Fit for 55 package set even more ambitious goals, including for ships to have a fuel mix of at least 2% of specific renewable fuels as of 2034. There are, of course, already in force various regulations to try to achieve decarbonisation goals, most notably the IMO 2020 sulfur regulations and, since the start of this year, the EEXI and CII regulations. But while the regulations we have seen to date may go some way to make the shipping industry reduce its carbon emissions, it seems likely that there will need to be some fundamental changes to how ships operate if the longer-term decarbonisation goals are to be met. And this is where alternative fuels come in.
We hear a lot about LNG being more widely used on vessels as a fuel, as an alternative to traditional marine fuel. I know you do a lot of work in the LNG area. Do you envisage LNG being the alternative fuel of the future?
Well, LNG has certainly been considered by many in recent years to be the most readily available solution to reduce CO2 emissions, at least in the short to medium term. It is available now and has lower CO2 emissions than traditional marine fuels. Apparently, it can reduce greenhouse gas emissions by up to 23% compared with traditional marine fuels, depending on the engine used. The shipping industry has, as many will know, seen an increase in orders for LNG-fueled or dual-fuel vessels, as well as LNG bunker vessels and the development of infrastructure for LNG bunkering at ports. The fact that these investments have been made indicates that some of the industry have concluded that using LNG as fuel is the way forward to reduce carbon emissions and try to comply with environmental regulations. Having said that, there are still concerns over the use of LNG as fuel and questions as to whether it is a long-term solution. In particular, there are concerns over price volatility and in relation to security of supply, particularly given the ongoing war in Ukraine. And of course, we must not forget that LNG is a fossil fuel, the use of which contributes to greenhouse gas emissions. And it also comes with a risk of methane slip, and methane is even more damaging to the environment than CO2. Future regulations are likely to limit greenhouse gas emissions further, and methane has recently been included within the scope of the EU emissions trading scheme. This could all result in LNG being a far less attractive alternative fuel than it seems to some now in the medium to long term. And it's perhaps for those reasons that LNG is often referred to as a transitional fuel. It perhaps also explains why some recent reports have indicated that fewer ship owners than in previous years are now considering LNG as an alternative fuel, and that more ship owners are now looking at other options. Whether this is the case or not, given the decisions to invest in LNG as an alternative fuel that have already been made, it seems LNG will have a role as a transitional fuel. But that raises the question, what fuel is that transition likely to be to? And there are various options, aren't there, Laura?
Yes, the main fuels being discussed as alternatives to traditional marine fuel are hydrogen, ammonia, methanol and biofuels. There's also discussion around how the maritime industry can use other sustainable sources of fuel, such as solar and wind, to help move the industry away from reliance on carbon-based fuels. So there are plenty of options, but as things stand, none of these alternative sources offer a silver bullet solution to replace the use of traditional bunkers. So for starters, none of these fuels are widely available at the moment. Their production and availability is limited, in part due to issues with storage and handling of the products. Hydrogen, for example, takes several times the volume of traditional fuel to produce the same power output. This leads to obvious issues around storage, both on shore and on the vessel. Hydrogen also needs to be stored at minus 253 degrees Celsius if it needs to remain in liquid form for transport. So the global fleet is generally not equipped to use this kind of fuel at the moment. Looking at ammonia and methanol, these have similar issues too. Both are less energy dense than traditional fuels. Ammonia requires almost three times the amount of fuel and methanol almost 2.5 times at the same amount to achieve the same energy output as traditional ship fuel. The upshot of this is that vessels are going to have to refuel more frequently, or more space will need to be dedicated on board vessels to actually store that fuel. Biofuels, which are currently more widely used as drop-in fuels, so they're being blended with traditional ship fuels when used, need to be carefully managed so that they don't damage the vessel's engine. There are also significant safety concerns that feed into the handling and storage issues as well. Hydrogen is highly explosive, which potentially increases the risks of fires on board vessels and poses an obvious danger to crew. Similarly, methanol and ammonia are highly toxic. This is something the industry is alive to, though. And in 2022, the IMO's subcommittee on the carriage of cargoes and containers announced that they intend to develop safety guidelines for the use of both ammonia and hydrogen. The guidelines for hydrogen are expected to be finalised this year and for ammonia in 2024. And these proposed guidelines will set out the provisions on things like ventilation, temperature controls, emergency shutdown procedures, safe bunkering guidance, and the risk assessments that will need to be done for use of both fuels. So ship owners and managers are going to have a lot to get to grips with, and crew are likely going to need to be retrained to be able to properly handle these potentially more dangerous fuels. And obviously new safety procedures are going to have to be put in place on board vessels.
You raise a good point, Laura, about the ability of existing engines to process alternative sources of fuel. No doubt the future of shipbuilding will see changes to traditional engine layouts and storage as vessels adapt to the use of alternative or dual fuel systems. In the meantime, I expect some owners may be considering what modifications they could make to vessels and the impact this would have on vessel operations. This may, of course, raise legal issues, particularly if vessels are under long-term charters and need to be taken out of service for these works. Many charters concluded prior to the recent raft of regulations are simply silent on how ship owners and charters should cooperate to apportion liability in the event changes are needed to comply with these regulations. But would a change to using any of the alternative fuels you have mentioned be a completely green solution?
I think we're some time away yet from having a totally clean alternative source of ship fuel. Hydrogen, for example, which is often branded the greenest solution to this fuel problem, is in its most widely available form, which is often called grey hydrogen, still derived from fossil fuels. Its carbon footprint is somewhere between natural gas and coal, according to the Centre for Strategic and International Studies. The better alternatives from an environmental perspective are green or blue hydrogen, as they're called. Blue hydrogen is still derived from fossil fuels, but produces less CO2 emissions per kilogram. On the other hand, green hydrogen is by far the greenest of these solutions, as it's formed by splitting water into its hydrogen and oxygen components using electricity. Of course, you could say then, well, where does that electricity come from? Are we simply moving the CO2 production elsewhere in the supply chain if the electricity we're using comes from fossil fuel in the first place? That aside, though, it's virtually the only zero carbon option available, save for solar and wind. The costs of producing this green hydrogen, though, are several times that of producing grey hydrogen, so it's by no means a sort of cheap fix option. The combustion of ammonia also releases nitrous oxide, and that's a greenhouse gas, which is even more potent than CO2. So additional technology will likely be needed to minimise these emissions being emitted into the environment. And then we have biofuels, which are derived from animal or vegetable products. So whilst these fuels are often byproducts of other processes, questions can be raised regarding the land use required to produce these kinds of fuels.
It sounds to me like there's still a long way to go before the use of alternative fuels becomes a reality.
Yeah, I think so. Huge capital investment is going to be needed to make the use of alternative greener fuels widely workable. Globally, ships will need to be retrofitted in order to be able to burn new types of fuel. Supply chain logistics need to be set up to safely transport these fuels, and the infrastructure put in place to allow vessels to actually refuel in port. So although whilst these fuels are not widely in use, many vessel owners may be reluctant to spend the money to change their vessels to run on alternative fuels. That having been said, though, several industry reports suggest that this is already happening. So in March of this year, Stolt-Nielsen's terminals division, Stolthaven Terminals, announced that they were exploring projects to provide storage for hydrogen, ammonia and green methanol. Similarly, Maersk also announced last month that it had signed a partnership agreement to explore the production of greener fuels in Egypt.
I was also interested to read last year when Germany announced it would start to import LNG and undertook urgent work to the port of Wilhelmshaven to enable them to import LNG from FRSUs, that they expressed hope that the development of infrastructure to allow this could smooth the way to importing ammonia and developing a hub for hydrogen in the future. But this suggests there may be scope in the future to change some LNG infrastructure to hydrogen or ammonia infrastructure, which could make those options more attractive, including for use on vessels. But going back to what you're saying, if the investment required may put some off, what are the factors motivating the industry to look to alternative fuels?
I think the use of alternative fuels is not something the maritime industry can really ignore. As you mentioned at the start, Mike, we've seen numerous regulations being introduced by the IMO and the EU that are forcing the shipping industry to minimise its carbon impact. Others are expected to come into force in the next year or so, and there may be more regulation in the future. The use of alternative fuels is one way owners might look to comply with these regulatory obligations. For example, alternative fuels offer a potential means of compliance with the CII regulations, which came into force earlier this year and are going to become more stringent in years to come. Switching to alternative fuels may be a quicker and more effective route to lowering a vessel's overall carbon emissions, albeit that it's going to come at a cost. Additionally, the EU has set out plans for its Fuel EU regulations. These proposals set out limits for emissions produced by ships with a gross tonnage of over 5,000 arriving at or departing from EU ports. If these regulations are adopted, ships will have to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions year on year, starting with a 2% reduction in 2024 and incrementally decreasing the emissions to achieve a 75% reduction by 2050. The upcoming expansion of the EU ETS into the shipping industry from 2024 will also force both owners and charterers to start considering their carbon output. The EU's cap and trade system will potentially start to hit the wallets of owners and charterers who may now become financially incentivized to turn to alternative fuels. The EU and the IMO are also trying to do their bit to provide legislative support to make use of alternative fuels a reality. So I mentioned earlier, we're expecting safety guidance from the IMO on the use of hydrogen and ammonia, and the EU have announced plans for their alternative infrastructure regulation, which will require EU member states to provide adequate recharging and refuelling infrastructure at EU ports, with a view to increase LNG availability from 2015 and onshore electrical power by 2030. So there's clearly a lot for the maritime industry to be thinking about here. What do you think the future holds for alternative fuels, Mike?
Well, from what you say, Laura, it seems to me like this is certainly unlikely to be a one-size-fits-all situation. Whether a particular alternative fuel is attractive will depend on the type of vessel and shipping operation and trading pattern. For example, in sectors that require trading flexibility, an alternative fuel only available in certain ports will not be appropriate, and other fuels may not be appropriate for vessels with limited storage capacity or which travel long distances between places where they can refuel. It therefore seems unlikely that the same alternative fuel will be appropriate for all vessels, or that we will see an industry-wide decision to make a transition to just one alternative fuel. Ultimately, scalability and a fuel being available at a commercially viable price will be key. But to achieve that and make the transition from traditional marine fuels, significant investment will be required for the infrastructure to produce, store, supply and use new fuels. Given all the uncertainty as to where that investment will be focused, there is a risk for ship owners that they make an investment decision, such as refitting a vessel or ordering a new vessel based on one type of fuel, and that while that fuel may be competitive early on, it may not be in the future. From a legal point of view, the use of new technologies and fuels will mean new risks, pollution, safety issues to both crew and vessels, given the flammable and toxic nature of some fuels, fuel quality issues, for example, if biofuels are blended with traditional marine fuels, to name but a few. Ship owners and charterers will need to understand these new risks and try to mitigate them through practical steps such as training and through their contractual arrangements. Also, industry bodies such as BIMCO will likely develop new clauses. But as we have seen with the BIMCO CII clause, such clauses are not necessarily a simple or widely accepted solution. It also seems to me that at the moment there may be more of a stick rather than carrot approach given the regulations to reduce carbon emissions. But as well as regulations, everyone in the shipping industry will need to keep a close eye on policy changes and investment decisions which may encourage the transition to a particular alternative fuel or fuels. For example, the money raised through the EU emissions trading scheme will be placed in an innovation fund. This will be one of the world's largest funding programs for innovative low carbon technologies. And it'll be interesting to see in what areas this funding is directed. Looking ahead, the next big event on the horizon is the IMO's MEPC 80 meeting in July this year. There it is expected that the IMO will adopt a revised greenhouse gas emissions strategy, which will define the regulatory framework and transitional path for shipping's decarbonisation. Ultimately, whether the shipping industry will make the transition to alternative fuels by its own volition remains to be seen. If, as currently seems likely, there are further and more stringent regulations in the years to come, these will likely make the transition unavoidable. Either way, it does currently seem inevitable that we will eventually see a transition to alternative fuels.
I agree, Mike. I think it'll be really interesting to see how the industry adapts to these new challenges in the coming years and the legal and practical issues that will inevitably arise. I think that's all we have time for today, Mike. So thanks to all listening for your time, and please join us again next time for the next episode of Trading Straits.
Thanks.
Trading Straits is a Reed Smith production. Our producer is Ali McArdle. For more information about Reed Smith's energy and natural resources or transportation practices, please email tradingstraits@reedsmith.com. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, and reedsmith.com, and our social media accounts at reedsmithllp on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship, nor is it intended to suggest or establish standards of care applicable to particular lawyers in any given situation. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. Any views, opinions, or comments made by any external guest speaker are not to be attributed to Reed Smith LLP or its individual lawyers. All rights reserved.